Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Pod Stallions. My name is Brian, and I am with my friend in Burbank, California, Mr. Jason Lindsay. How are
good
you?
Good evening, everyone.
Good I'm evening. Very well. And bless. Jason, it's that time of year. It is pumpkin spice.
Pumpkin spice everything.
Yeah, I believe that's the main motivation in Dune, right, is pumpkin spice?
Yes, it's all about a franchise for pumpkin spice lattes making their way to Arrakis. Who's going to get control of the pumpkin spice lattes?
Right, right. I've never had one of those, and I hopefully never will.
Yeah, it just seems like a lot of sugar to me.
Yeah, pumpkin pie all day long. Anything else? I don't know.
I'm a sucker for like pumpkin, you know, there's like that pumpkin spice donut that some people do, and there's, oh, Little Debbie's getting into the pumpkin spice game, like, but it seems like pumpkin spice has kind of always been around, but then it became a thing like 4 or 5 years ago.
You know, but what I'm actually gotta stop you right there, because Little Debbie, this is a Dolly Madison sponsored podcast.
It is, and I'll be perfectly even more honest, I haven't had a Little Debbie cake. I can't even remember the last time. But you know, when you see the box and it's like, oh, look, it's like a little maple leaf. They turned the chocolate into a maple leaf. She's getting into the game, too. But yeah, this is a Dolly Madison sponsored podcast. Always has been.
Yeah. Even though I was born and raised on Vashon cakes.
Which cakes? Which ones?
Vashon cakes.
Vashon?
Very popular series of French-Canadian pastries that, believe it or not, they actually had to take the sugar down when they sold them to English Canada, because we were like, oh my, like, there's just something about the Quebecer palate, they like sweet. But I mean, like, I, you know, they had names like Joe Louis, Mae West, I love Vashon cakes.
Are they still around?
Yes, they absolutely are. And every once in a while, my wife brings home like the caramel cupcakes or something. Not so much anymore because the kids don't live here anymore. You know, but yeah.
Caramel cupcake. Yeah. That sounds good.
Yeah, it is quite a unique taste. And those remind me of childhood more than anything. Billet logs. That which just sounds like the worst thing a person would put in their mouth when I
billet,
think of it.
B-I-L-L-E-T-T? Billet?
Yeah, I think they're called like billet logs. And it was basically like a jelly roll with coconut around it.
Oh, very okay. Good. Yeah, yeah. Jelly roll. It's kind of like a spiral, like it's rolled, you can roll it kind of thing.
Yeah. I think a lot of the names were French and translated into English, so they didn't always work very well. I mean, when Mario Lemieux was big as a hockey player, they had some sort of donut that they were selling in variety stores, and it was called, I guess it was, you know, in French, I think it'd be Mario Bien. And when it came to Ontario, they just called it Mario Bun, which just was like something that made us laugh. You know, it's like the Reggie Bar kind of thing in Canada. Anyway, segueing from snack treats to our subject this October. And you know what? I think it's okay because Halloween is always about snacks. We're going to talk about werewolves.
We are. It just which it's not like we need October to talk about.
No. I talked about werewolves all this month or last month, too. But in fact, I am designing a werewolf doll right now for Lincoln Monsters. Yeah.
See? There you go. Perfect timing. And I literally just saw a trailer. I went to see Suitable Flesh, The Substance yesterday.
Oh, how is that? That's some like Cronenbergian body horror, correct?
It is fantastic. Huh. It is really something. And I do not say that lightly. It is like, just when you think it's not gone far enough, it cranks up the volume, and holy cats. And both the leads, Margaret Qualley and especially Demi Moore, unbelievably good in this thing. But they, you know, all the trailers were horror trailers. And there's a new Wolfman coming, which is the one that I think my buddy Ryan Gosling was going to do a few years back. And it was the second, it's the same guy that did the redo of The Invisible Man from a couple years ago.
Yeah, it's Blumhouse.
Yes, and it's but it's that guy, I think that Lee Whannell, whatever his name is.
Yeah, I actually, I don't know his name. I just know that, like, you know, Universal kind of wanted to do this Avengers, but with monsters a few years ago.
Oh, and the Dark, what was it called? Dark Universe.
And I was so like, here's my money.
Yeah.
Please let me watch this Schadenfreude. Like, even after seeing The Mummy, I'm like, I so hope they make three more of these.
And this may not be a popular opinion. I've said it before. I don't think The Mummy is like this train wreck that it's made out of.
Oh, no. It's
kind of batshit. And, you know, it is not, you know, like the worst film ever made, or worst horror film ever made. You see what they're trying to do, but it just...
It's just that I've seen it in other things.
Yeah.
And I've seen it in other Universal films called The Mummy. it really wasn't like they made it out. I think it really got screwed by that trailer that had no sound.
Yeah, and that then, was a bit of a faux pas.
And I'm not a Tom Cruise fan, and I think he brings a certain layer of criticism to things.
You're it's the gun is loaded in favor most of the time, but there's a lot of cynicism.
When people can kick, they will. And, but as a unit, and I will admit it was schlocky.
It was very schlocky, and it was kind of a
but I did love concept. Russell Crowe as Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
Yeah.
Like, and him being the Nick Fury of that was like, okay, that's just going to fall apart. That's kind of fun, you know?
Yeah, like, it's a big fight to take off, try to make that happen.
Yeah, like, I look at those kind of movies sometimes as, like, okay, like, yeah, this has nothing to do with, you know, Karloff or any of that stuff. They have just gone, you know, theme park ride. And I can just sometimes do that, like, with Godzilla movies and those other things. You can kind of, you won't defend them. But you won't go like, oh, that was horrible. You're like, nah, it was just kind of bubblegum crap that I've forgotten.
It's you could see somewhere in there, for better or worse, somebody was trying to do something different.
Mm-hmm. The
Universal Monster brand. What can we do? How can we hipify it, etc. Then along comes the guy, the same guy, I think, Whannell, the director who did that Invisible Man one.
Which was fantastic.
Which was really good. Which was really good. And, you know, it takes an interesting, you know, route sort of to get where it does.
And also Elizabeth Moss sold it.
Yeah, she's great in it. And it had surprises in it. And again, not what you really expected that thing was going to be, because Invisible Man is kind of a creep. You know, he's always kind of a...
Well, yeah, I mean, but like, I didn't I don't know how to say this, but like, the classics are the classics. And we can always go back to them. Seeing an interpretation of something means it's keeping it alive. And we may not like it, but, you know, I'm 54. And I've seen how many iterations of Spider-Man and Batman and that sort of thing. So I like new twists on things. You know, like every season of Kamen Rider in Japan was a new rider. You didn't get to cling to the past.
Well,
and that was done to sell toys, but it also... It also kept the story going.
I'm on record. I love Skull Island. I liked King of the Monsters. And then when it was Kong and Godzilla, I freaking loved it. And I love the new one. It's exactly what it says on the tin. And that's what you need. And they're
see, the last one I tried to watch and I was like, okay, they've gone too dumb for me.
Oh,
I wasn't
mad
about it. I have to be like in a hospital room or
that's the funny thing. I go back and watch the Toho stuff and, you know, the Jaguar one and whatever, and it's like this is really dumb stuff, and we love it and we've known it forever, but it's really dumb.
Oh,
it's
yeah, so, I think I do kind and, of think
you know,
the
you know, in a 2-hour, 90-minute movie, I get my monsters for about 8 minutes. So yeah. If you're gonna bring it back and make it kind of bubblegum, then crank it up. Make
oh,
it
yeah.
Give Kong a big metal fist. I don't care. They're giant monsters fighting, you know, in Egypt. That's all I care about. And they're doing that to me. They're doing it just right. It's and then clearly it's connecting with people because they're huge.
Oh
and
no, you know what? I have nothing against them being fun. Because in the same year you get one of those, you get a Godzilla Minus One, which was possibly the best Godzilla movie I've ever seen.
Now, see, that's interesting because our pal, Matt Weinholt, feels the exact same way. Really doesn't like the new stuff, the MonsterVerse stuff. I thought Minus One was great.
Yeah.
Really good. I maybe will watch it again someday, but that's about it for me. I saw it
in the theater with my daughter, who I have been bringing to Godzilla movies since she was a little squirt, and it's a daddy daughter thing. So
okay.
You know,
and
you have to
that add some points to it. But for me, I think the major difference is that is still making, as beautiful as it was and as great as it looked, it still has the rhythm of all the other Godzilla movies. And you're either an old school Godzilla person or you're okay with going, let's take a bigger budget, make it a little more silly, and have monsters fight.
No, you know what? I disagree with that on the concept that I've boiled down Godzilla movies to two things. The Godzilla stuff and the ground crew. If the ground crew is boring, it's not a good Godzilla film. If, you know, like, you know, they amp up the camp and they try to do that. But, you know, Godzilla versus Megalon, which was I think you were talking about Jet Jaguar. That's starting to get to the Skid Row era of Godzilla, where they really didn't, you know, they were starting to run out of.
Yeah, but you couldn't you wouldn't argue that the bulk of those films and each one of them is the human stuff, and then you get some monster stuff.
They're all like that, and I mean, okay. You so know, you get some cool like mid-century Japan in there, but. What I was trying to say is, like, my favorite Godzilla movie is Mechagodzilla, Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla, because the subplot, the non-Godzilla plot, is about green space apes trying to take over the world. And it's like a 6-year-old me's fantasy, where it's like Planet of the Apes and Godzilla. And I will fully admit, like, it's a dumb movie. But it kept my attention the entire time.
Okay, now this one, very well written, very well acted, Minus One. The Godzilla sequences are unbelievable. Just the ocean, the shot of that of him, you know, trailing the boat alone is worth the viewing. But for me, I don't care. I don't care about the dude. I don't care about his journey. Oh. I just don't care. I don't care. It's not adventuresome enough for me. It's kind of like, wah, this is sad.
Okay, so it just didn't. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
well,
it's not.
I think that's
a fair criticism.
It didn't grab you.
If you're going to go giant monsters creating havoc, you might as well ramp up the ground crew, like you just said, and throw in some green apes. And that's what the new movies do.
I think if I was in charge of Hollywood, a lot of films would include green apes.
Yes. I don't think you could put them in anything in terms of endearment.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Oh, how amazing would that have been? As good as it gets. And
as
just
good
some
as it
green
gets.
Apes come in and attack Jack Nicholson.
So I say bring if it's silly on paper already, you might as well ramp up the silly. I don't need the heavy or the boring scenes or whatever. And so when Godzilla's back in Minus One, it's extraordinary. When he's off screen, just don't really care. But
okay, well, that's a fair thing to say.
It was a very good film. And I couldn't be more thrilled that it's got the attention that it has and that they won the Oscar. And, I mean, it's so cool that we live to see something like that.
And by the same token, I'm completely happy with the you know, the Fast and the Furious MonsterVerse that I'm in and out of. I don't hate it. I would never say I disliked it.
I'd rather have it than not have it.
I would rather it exist than not exist.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I've had some good times in the theater. I liked the first one. I really liked the second one. I would say Skull Island is my favorite Kong movie of all time.
I just can't get enough of the movie.
It's very well done film. But, you know, we are 16 minutes into talking
speaking of King Kong, let's talk about werewolves.
So the first thing I wanted to ask you was, what are your first werewolf encounters as a kid?
That's a really good question. I was trying to think of this. And I think it's got to be either the classic The Wolfman movie, which would have been up at Breezy Point Resort that I've talked about before, which I can't even explain what this. It was like a summer thing that families would go, and there was, you know, golf and things. I don't even know where it was, but it was Breezy Point Resort.
Wasn't it like in the Dells? What were you in, the Wisconsin Dells?
I think it was in Minnesota.
Minnesota. Okay.
But yeah. But they would have movie nights. You know, they must have had things on a calendar. Be like, bring the kids over to this room in the lodge or wherever it is, and near the gift shop, and there'll be a movie night. And so I saw Creature from the Black Lagoon, and I think the Wolfman on one of those trips. On the screen, like this is pre VHS or whatever, or it might have even been. And I know you're going to flip with this. It might have even been the Monster Squad TV show.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't, then it could have been Groovy Ghoulies, where I first kind of went, who's that guy? You know, like somewhere in that wilderness of those things. And I don't know what the timeline is, but I can't specifically say what the very first, you know, werewolf, wolfman thing I saw was. But it's somewhere in that basket. And it could very well have been Monster Squad, because I was glued to that show every morning.
Yeah, me too. You know what? I'm going to tell you something that will make you laugh.
Mm.
It had to be. 100% had to be, unless there was a werewolf on Sesame Street that I'm unaware of. Mm. Hilarious House of Frightenstein.
Okay.
Which is a Canadian show that aired a lot. Especially, I grew up an hour outside of where it filmed.
Right.
So, you just turn the dial and pick it up, because there were Canadian content laws.
Yes.
Anyway, it was a brilliant television program, and all the characters, save for a couple, were played by Billy Van, who was a huge talent. He went on to do the Sonny and Cher show, but never got the recognition he deserved. And his character, the Wolfman, was a very long segment on this show. First of all, it was a parody of Wolfman Jack.
Yeah, he was like a DJ, right?
Yeah, and I am the Wolf Man. And he was dressed in mod clothing. And then what they would do, and I didn't realize this until I met the creators of the show and talked to them a little bit, but they would do, like, you know, they played Jumpin' Jack Flash by the Rolling Stones, but I guess this was not like, you know, any kind of royalties were paid to the Rolling Stones.
Right.
But just in the same way you watch a Chinese Kung Fu movie and they're playing the Empire Strikes Back theme or the Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Right.
Oh, but yeah, he would do these kind of psychedelic freakouts to music. And then the Monster Squad. So I always kind of viewed the Wolfman. I think that's kind of where I come from. In that I kind of came to horror through humor. Like, you know, it was almost gateway horror. And because, like, if you look at the 60s monster explosion, and I was just on a podcast recently and I was explaining my Monster Kid origins. There were some neighbors next door to me named the Millers, who their kids, like, by the time I was 3 years old, they had beards. And one day they just handed me a box of junk that included a ton of those You'll Die Laughing monster cards, you know, with pictures of Universal Monsters with jokes and a stack of the Cracked magazines, the Halloween ones that had all the Universal Monster pictures with the captions and there I went. You know, I mean, I was powerless to resist this charm.
And that must have I know that I was around Famous Monsters magazine prior to the first issue I bought with my own money, which I think was 79, which was like the year of vampires in 79, when every
Love at First Bite, Frank Langella,
Love at First
Dracula,
Bite, Della, Salem's Lot. I forget what the year of the Herzog Nosferatu was, but it was, I think it maybe hit the U.S. in 79, 78, 79, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And, but I'd paged through it before, and I might have seen something in there too, like one of those magazines that kind of, and I think Abbott and Costello, one of those that whichever one, Meet Frankenstein, isn't it Meet Frankenstein, then Meet the Wolfman, is it the second one?
The Wolfman's, no, they never met, they met the Wolfman in Frankenstein.
With Frankenstein, that's right, okay, yeah. That was seen probably some weekend, too.
I think after that, like, you know, you would see the Wolfman in endless comic book poster ads.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm just trying to think of where I could see him.
Do you remember the Slim Jim comic book ad where the Wolfman's like taking a bite of a Slim Jim? It's like a Jack Davis drawing, kind of.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, I do. Absolutely.
What's funny about it is that all these characters, and I just saw an ad the other day for this company called Han Solo that makes like jewelry. You know, like I've got a heavy metal ring. It's like a ring, but it's got the heavy metal logo is what it is carved into it. Mm-hmm. And they're doing like a bunch of Universal Monster stuff. And then I'm like, oh my God. And they've got these rings of the Bride and Frankenstein's monster and the Wolfman and Dracula. But, you know, I'm just looking at it going, this is never going to go away. And when we were kids, you know, we probably loved this stuff and were aware of more of it than we actually saw the original films. You know what I mean? Like we were already
Crestwood books and all that stuff made me a total weirdo. Yeah, I was joking on Ray Castile's podcast that like I literally remember turning down going out to play because the Invisible Ray was on television. And you know, that's Karloff and Lugosi. And I remember I'm 12 years old, shutting the blinds on a Saturday afternoon.
Yeah.
Like an elderly shut-in this film. And
getting out the bong.
Bong.
No, I'm kidding. But no, but there was, you know, there was something. As much as the monster stuff and those monster kids we always talk about, that era, and then the 60s and things hitting television again, and the horror hosts and all that stuff. There was a lot of it in the 70s. We had the monster cereals. We had, I remember Burger Chef. Burger Chef had the two, Burger Chef and Chef Jeff were the two kind of mascots. But they also had these kid meals that had monsters in them, like a Dracula. Yeah. Well, you know, and then Dynamite Magazine had, I forget the artist, but kind of a famous artist now. You know, there were.
I'm actually following along because I didn't have Dynamite as a kid, and we don't have Burger Chef, so.
Okay, so Dynamite
Magazine. I'm learning.
Dynamite Magazine was kind of like.
Oh, I have back issues of it now.
Okay, so you know what? Yeah. Okay, so but in there, every now and then there'd be like door hangers, doorknob hangers you could cut out, or a poster, or a game, or something, and they had monsters in there too. They had a particular artist that drew like Dracula had like a goatee, was like a triangle almost. And there was a wolf man kind of thing. So these things were always kind of around, you know, that we were aware of. And it's hard to pinpoint, you know, chicken versus egg kind of thing. Like what, like when did I actually see their inaugural films? Like, I don't even know if I saw Young Frankenstein before I saw the complete Frankenstein. I can't remember.
Scared the hell out of me.
You know, but Young Frankenstein was, as a little kid, I kind of had the same feeling with that as I did with Holy Grail, Monty Python and the Holy Grail, the first time I saw it, where they're so dark and they're so atmospheric that I was on that cusp of like, should I be laughing at this? And Wilder was so manic and everything, and they were so authentic with the, you know, so I don't remember which came first, but it just seemed like monsters were always around. And, you know, the Wolfman didn't get his own cereal until later, which was Fruit Brute, which they never actually, did they ever say he was a werewolf? I think he was, but I don't know if they ever claimed that he was. But he didn't get the inaugural pushing the boat out with the three monsters. He was always kind of an afterthought.
And I would have to get his pet DNA analyzed to let you know if he's actually truly a werewolf or if he is just fox terrier.
Right. We still don't know. And then, oddly enough, because this is relevant, the first like modern kind of werewolf thing that I was around, and it would have been also in probably in Fangoria or Starlog or something, was The Howling,
which happened
to be the first movie I snuck into with my cousin.
I know we're going to jump all over the place, but The Howling, I was just, my wife and I just recently rewatched American Werewolf in London, and I put those films on the same level.
Yeah, they're very, it's kind of weird that both have plenty of comedic elements in them,
mm-hmm.
came out back to back like that.
I feel like it's just kind of, they came out of the, like, remember how, like, cynical movies were at that point?
Yeah.
And everything had to be deconstructed and you know. So I'm not surprised they both came out of that mindset. I don't think it's, but, you know, they both probably were like, let's make a stupid werewolf movie, but how do we make it, you know, how do we make it palatable? How do we make it real?
Well,
and they both succeed.
The Howling actually might get the edge in the sense of how they chose to set it. Like, everyone's got this thing they need to work through, and all the self-help stuff and the, you know, EST and primal scream therapy and all those things that were rampant in the 70s. What a perfect thing to throw into the story, this retreat and this, you know, getting in touch with them. They're all friggin', you know, werewolves and shit. But that was when, like, oh, monsters are back. Like, there was the Empire stuff in 79, and then werewolves kind of eclipsed it, if you will, 80, 81. And of course The Howling has the nude scene at the campfire, which is the first nude lady I saw on the big screen right at that moment. And I had a little heart attack, a little mini stroke as a kid.
I believe that what that was unlocking a medallion that immediately popped up on your chest.
It popped up. See, we all wore chains. We were Italian, so we all had like
But I want to think it made out. That Transformers.
Yeah, mine jumped out from under the shirt and went over the shirt from that point, right at that thing, and it went right over the shirt, and that was it for the rest of my. I grew
Come
up.
Come on, Mom, let's go home.
Came out of the theater with a tash. Yeah. You know, it was something because I thought the cops were going to come in. I really, as a little, because we were doing something illegal, we were in a movie we shouldn't be in. It's rated R. They're going to put us in jail. And it happens to be the booby scene right here. So it's a very mixed memory.
Awkward as you might feel there, I just want to give you, it wasn't my first scene of nudity, but it might as well have been. All the Right Moves, Tom Cruise, Leah Thompson.
83.
I saw that at the drive-in with my parents.
Ooh. Yeah.
So not only are we in, you know, it was like we were just trapped in this cubicle.
Yeah. I would when an episode of Python came on, I would get on the carpet. I would lay down on the carpet with my face, you know, on my fists and my elbows on the carpet, because I thought any minute now there could be a topless woman that would show up. Yeah. And if my the back of my head is to my parents, then I don't have to acknowledge. If I say, "Oh, Jason, close your eyes," what? I don't know what. Why? What? Yeah. What did I? Oh, that. Oh, yeah. I didn't even see that. Then I could just not even be
my,
in the.
My mother had some weird sonar, like any 80s movie I watched, and because of the bill Ronald Reagan signed, they all had, you know, at least one pair of breasts. You know, she would walk in only on those scenes.
Yeah,
of any film, same. And then judge me and make me feel
terrible. The Road Warrior. The Road Warrior. Yeah. One tiny scene where her top gets ripped and my mom happens.
Oh yeah.
To, like, what are you watching?
It's my mother walked in on that scene in Weird Science. Where the gal's being pulled by the weird Lisa Hurricane, and her clothes come off, and, like, you know, I don't even know why they did nudity in that scene.
I mean,
who was that for?
We should do an episode just on eighties nude scenes or definitive nude scenes throughout our life.
Can we get my mom on there?
You can be a guest. Yeah.
My mom would have opinions on, like, Hamburger, the motion picture. She would have a wide variety of opinions.
If my father, who wasn't around that much, you know, up to a certain point, he wasn't around much even before he left, but he would do this thing that was so, I guess, you know, if it was something really gross or something scares about, or there might be some nudity or something kind of like, because we watched a lot of PBS, a lot of British stuff. He'd go like, Jason, close your eyes. He'd sort of yell at
me. So your dad did earmuffs.
He did, with the eyes. And I'm like, what? Close your eyes right now, damn it. And I'd have to close my eyes and be like, is it done? Yeah, open your eyes. I'm like, well, just missed half the
fight. I got in with my dad is I had a friend sleeping over and we were watching movies and we're going to stay up late and watch Saturday Night Live. And then City TV put on the American Gigolo, uncensored.
Oh, goodness.
And my dad just turned to my friend and I was like, go to bed. And it was like, you know, it was like 9:59.
Right now.
And I was a little, like, ticked off with him, and I mouthed him off. And it didn't go well. And my mom's like, you should apologize to your dad. And I was like, I still haven't done that. I will never do that. Because I know what he was doing. You know, he just...
Well, in a way, he might have done you some good, because Richard Gere lets it all hang out, too. So it could have been, you know...
Oh, yeah, I didn't... You know what? I probably... I got to admit...
Surprise.
I probably was angry because I wanted to watch, like, Metal Storm, The Destruction of Jared Sin or something. But, yeah.
That was a little bit later. That was 83.
Okay, fine. No, wait.
This
would have been 83 because of
it
being on City TV.
Right.
So
the two big ones of our, I think, of our childhood, and I'm getting back to werewolves, not Brett.
Oh,
the two.
Yeah, because I would
right.
I would say I would suggest Kitten Nativity.
You're like Sybil Danning? No, yeah. We're still talking about werewolves. Have got to be The Howling and American Werewolf in London. Now. I was aware of them and saw images. Because we did the sneak in thing, but it was for 10 minutes. And then I didn't see the whole thing until VHS, whenever that was. And then I didn't see American Werewolf in the theater until VHS.
No, me either.
But
I would have been 10 years old when American Werewolf came out.
Yeah, it blew me away. I mean,
I want to tell you my experience seeing it, and I find this really funny. It was one of those weekends where, you know, like, VCRs were still strange and new. So, an uncle or, you know, somebody would rent a VCR. And I think it was my neighbor who did.
Yeah.
And they invited me to spend the weekend with the VCR, you know. And we're going to have two movies. We're going to have Annie and Best Little Whorehouse in Texas.
Wow.
And
quite the dump.
No, I don't know if that was the same weekend. Anyways, because I remember that got changed because, you know, you don't want to show children a movie with whorehouse in the title, even though that is apparently a very innocent film. I've never seen it. But anyways, they left us in the basement alone. It was my friend and me and his little sister and her friend, who I knew from the neighborhood. They were like nine. Those kids, because I, you know, I couldn't have been older than 11 when we watched this on VHS. And what killed me was, like, the gore got to me in the film. It really shocked the hell out of me.
American
Werewolf. Yeah, and yeah. Not Annie.
Annie got pretty tough.
Actually, I don't think I focused on Annie. Like, I think I watched the credits, the end credits. I was playing Star Wars or something. But what I couldn't get over, and I watched this film last week, was when I watch it, what really killed me, because the movie gave me nightmares, was Erin, the girl behind me, had seen it several times already, the 9-year-old.
What?
And to the point where she was doing running commentary through the whole thing. Like going, yeah, that guy's stomach's going to gurgle now. Look at that. And so when I watch the film, I still have, like, because that, you know, I'm a boy 2 years or, you know, 2 or 3 years older than this girl. And she's narrating me through something that's actually, like, freaking me out. And so I've come to love the film. My wife and I just, like I said, we just watched it on Sunday. And I know every, you know, every move. And I actually really appreciated watching it again because I had forgotten things. I think, you know, over time you watch movies enough that you're not paying attention. You're looking at your phone, and just so happened that I was just tired and wanted to watch television. And I couldn't get over the nuances and the subtleties in the film and things I'd missed, you know?
Griffin Dunn, too.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
He's so good in that. And, you know, that opening, you know, the you know, it's telling you everything that's going to happen. They're going to the slaughtered lamb. Like, here
we
go.
And Rick Mayall's there.
Rick Mayall's in there, yeah. And the other guy, you made me miss. That guy's been in a million. And
also their cabbie is a Bricktop.
Yes, that's right.
I couldn't believe it because I love that actor.
And the guy who's the doctor, of course, was in one of the Key to Time Doctor Who's? He's the
yes, it was the Armageddon Factor general.
Armageddon Factor. He's the general guy in that.
Yeah. Which actually is one of the better Key to Time stories.
It is.
I think Ribose Operation and that one are my favorites.
Yeah, Ribose Operation minus the rubber suit monster on the ground.
I love that monster.
And the two criminal
wrong.
Guys, the criminal guys are fantastic. Like the
dialogue. Oh, yeah, the criminal guys and Binro the Heretic. That is good drama.
Good writing. But anyway, back to the werewolves. And of course, Jenny Agutter, which we would have been familiar with already from Logan's Run. We would have known her work, if you will.
It was funny. My wife didn't recognize her, and I said, "It's Jenny Agutter." She's like, "Who?" And I'm just like, "Oh." And she's like, "I'm not in your world." And I'm like, "She's in Marvel movies."
But it's one of those.
Might have been the first woman I ever saw nude. L'Age de Crystal on Radio Canada. I think that's where I saw it. And so, yeah, she, great actress, beautiful woman.
It's one of the, you know, it's the famous story that Landis always tells, you know, in every documentary. Everybody that I brought the script to said it's too scary to be a comedy. And it's too funny to be a horror film.
That's because it's in print.
Well, that's just it. It's one of those, and that's a rare thing. Like when you can blend horror and comedy like that, there's so many, many times it doesn't work and they don't pull it off. And then when it works, it's kind of glorious. And I think that's one of the blueprints that the Abbott and Costello ones, of course, but, you know, which weren't really scary, but American Werewolf was a really odd. Both of them, actually, Howling and American Werewolf, are very strange films that both work. And I think their reputation has. My only hang up with The Howling, and it's not a big hang up because it's still beautiful to watch, but the transformation scene seems to go on for 12 minutes.
Yeah, I think both of the films suffer from transformation porn, although in American Werewolf in London. It's meant to build empathy for him.
Howling, the chick is standing there going, "Are you going to wrap this
up?" Okay, yeah, no, that's what I mean. That's the difference. Is a witness.
Yeah, like she's like looking at her watch, going, "Okay."
Yeah, because like honestly, I mean, just look at the transformation scene from like He-Man. You're like, do his enemies just, you know, or the old Hercules cartoon where he puts the ring on and it's like a 15-second.
Well, it is pretty cool to watch.
Like, it was recycled animation, but you're like, why don't you attack him now?
But know? Again, look at that Howling scene and think, am I judging it too harshly with modern eyes?
I don't know. I can't.
Because they're trying to, you know, Bottin was not showing off, but kind of going, look what we can do now. Let's take our time, kind of thing. Whereas the
we like bladders.
Yes. Yeah, the Baker one is kind of like, I mean, the way that scene kicks off with him just getting up out of the chair and screaming, is it scared the socks off me the first time.
I saw the Howling. It's weird. I saw American Werewolf in London uncensored with a little girl telling me everything that was about to happen. And then I saw the Howling just on television probably a year or a year and a half after it was in theaters. And I remember, like, Buffalo 29 would have that thing where they play a movie on Friday night, they'd play it on Saturday afternoon, and they'd also play it on Sunday afternoon. Yeah. And I think I caught every airing of The Howling because it was so compelling. And this was sans nudity. Edited. So it wasn't like I was, you know, yay, hooray for boobies. I actually really enjoyed the film.
I think, I do too. And I think it's the atmosphere that it creates and the I don't want to say cult, but the retreat that everybody goes to and the history and, Dick Miller in the bookstore and talking about the history of werewolves and all that stuff. It's got a little bit more of an atmosphere and slight detective kind of thing when they're trying to figure out what the hell's going on. American Werewolf is a little more grubby. You know, it's kind of grubby. And of course, it's very funny. Like, it's got a lot of funny stuff in it. But when it gets violent and when it really
turns,
I think it really holds up. And my favorite shot of the entire film, and I'm sure I'm not the only one who said this or thought this, in the underground, the guy with the umbrella, there's that shot from the escalator, and you just see.
Oh yeah, that is.
And he cuts at just the right time. But that's something that I truly had never seen before. A werewolf.
You know what? And that is also something you don't see a lot from John Landis. Restraint.
Yes. But because it was on all fours and they could only do so much, they cut at just the right time. But it's the when you suddenly get the scope of how big this thing is, and I think it's on all fours is not something that I've seen before or since. No one's really ever done that with a werewolf movie, I don't think. And it really stood out. And the poor, the young couple that get attacked and the head at the end and all that stuff. I mean, it really holds up. I think all the horror elements of it hold up. Would you pick the overall design for the werewolf? Would you pick the Howling werewolf or the American werewolf?
I think I would pick the Howling werewolf because I think it's a biped.
Yeah.
And
tall, really tall.
Yeah. I this is just a me thing, but it's Wolf Man. Do you know what I mean?
Uh-huh. I get you. And, or it's werewolf.
Yeah, I understand that.
Just to be technical.
I'm not Team Jacob, if you know what I mean.
Team Jacob?
Yeah. Oh, gosh. I'm sorry. You didn't. It's a Twilight reference.
Team Jacob. Sure.
Yeah.
The werewolf.
But he was like one of the doofiest Narnia puppet kind of werewolf. Yeah. That does nothing for me. If it's not that's why I kind of liked the Underworld movies, was that they had these kind of practical Wolfman characters.
Yeah, that's really good.
Yeah, I remember like sitting in the theater going, like I'm in an amusement park ride, but everything looked great.
Yeah, the werewolves and the vampires have been at war for however long, and
I really actually kind of dug the I was just watching Monster Club the other day, and you know they kind of like they created like a were-goo or whatever at the end where the guy is vampire werewolf hybrid. And I remember really respecting that film because it was a practical creation.
You're talking about the Hammer film with Vincent, the one at the, in the
no, it's a, I think it's club, a 84. Post, yeah, it's like 81 or 82. It's got like UB40 in it, Monster
yeah,
Squad.
Yeah, the last Hammer, wasn't that a Hammer?
No, it's an Amicus. Yeah, I don't even think it's Amicus. Right? I think it's like the Amicus guys doing
the woman,
it.
The woman gets out and does the striptease and turns into a skeleton.
Yeah, yeah. And it's got that, you know, I'm just a sucker for your love, which, you know, I watched it 3 days ago and I can't get it out of my head. Where was I going?
The practical were vampire.
Oh, yeah. I liked the practical hybrid creation. It was just very effective and low budget, and that worked. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, I think, and I'm without naming names, there's recent things I've seen the last couple years, let's say, that there seems to be a steering toward the practical that people are really embracing, that they're like, oh my God, why don't we get more of this? I don't want to see a CGI face. I want
to. Yeah. And I know. Actually, I proposed to you, but October hit first, but I still want to do a conversation about restoration effects, you know, like when it works and when it doesn't and when
right.
it's needed and when
yeah.
it's not.
That's a great topic.
Would like to get, if you want to get Ned in on that or David Weiner, that'd be great.
Sure. Yeah, that's a good idea. That's a great idea.
So we get
kind of the year of the vampire in 79, and then we get The Howling and American Werewolf back to back. But we also get around the same time, do you remember?
Wolfen. Yeah, this is like Albert Finney, and I never wanted to gamble the $2 to rent the movie and find out it wasn't about werewolves. So I waited till the internet existed, and then I found out it wasn't about werewolves.
It's about Wolfens.
Yeah.
It's about werewolves. It's about Wolfens.
Money well saved.
But it did kind of ride the... It just sort of ride the wave of like, oh, is this another werewolf movie or something? And I remember seeing it in Starlog and yeah, Fangoria and, you know, friends talking about it, like, maybe we'll see this one too. And I didn't see it till years later. But it's not really a werewolf movie. It's got wolfish things in it, but, not.
I've seen some of it and, yeah.
Yeah, it's got some cool ideas in it. You got to admit, like, it, you know, it was trying, but it was trying for like a little bit of creature feature and a little bit of cop procedural kind of thing.
I think around that same time, 81, 82 is when I...
Not Jimmy Smits, Edward James Olmos, maybe. Sorry, go ahead, what?
Sorry, around 81, 82 is when I discovered my favorite werewolf of all time. And,
all right.
That was Paul Naschy. And the reason was, like, I was a monster kid. Like I said, I was a little weirdo. Crestwood Books, Starlog. And I would scan the TV guide. And, you know, a lot of shitty movies played at 2 a.m. and 1 a.m. But there was one that would show up, like, almost, you know, every month. And it would always have Bomb next to it. And it would say, it was Assignment Terror. It would say, Aliens Revive the Wolfman. The Mummy, Frankenstein, and Dracula to destroy the Earth. And at that age, I would just sit there and go, like, yeah, that's pretty damn good plot.
Like that's feasible.
Yeah, I want. But like, I mean, the main takeaway was like, I need to see that film. Sure. And I can't remember. I think it was I wrote it for a website years ago called Terror Trap. My friend Dan Hunter. It was like some long weekend party my parents had where they were, you know, drunk. And, you know, they became less attentive. And what happened was that movie was on like on the long weekend and the Sunday night. And there was an all night Twilight Zone marathon. So I like drank Coca-Cola all night, and I poured actually coffee into it. I didn't know what I was doing, and
man, you're like Laverne DeFazio with the milk Coca-Cola. You're really mixing it up.
And I caught Assignment Terror, which was not a great film, but it's a film that is, well, here we are, right? Like, I, you know, it endeared myself to it. And the thing that really endeared me was, this is a low budget film. Michael Rennie's in it, from Day of the Earth Stood Still, but he is slumming. And the film's incoherent. It was plagued by problems. But at the end, Nashi's Waldemar Danowski becomes the werewolf and kills Dracula and kills the mummy and kills Frankenstein. And it is such a...
Spoilers.
I'm sorry.
Jeez.
It's only been out since before we were born. So.
Well, still. I'm still gotten things ticked off the list here.
It's available on YouTube.
Going here. Skip that.
That movie and his performance as the Wolfman just kind of like.
Wasn't he known for doing his own makeup too? Or am I crazy? Is that not
right? I'm not sure about that. But what he was is like the first generation of Monster Kids. Like he was doing these films because he grew up in a terrible time in Spain's history. And he was doing the things that made him happy. And it's such a healthy, wonderful thing that I just think Paul Naschy is the greatest werewolf ever.
Wow. Ever. Like top of the list.
Yeah, not to say that, like...
best design and best...
Never the best
design. We gotta go through some of the classics, but I'm trying to get to...
The most iconic design of werewolves has to go to Lon Chaney Jr. and Jack Pierce.
Yes, and that, but I'd also pick the one, I love the one, what's the one I'm thinking of? Oh my God! I'm thinking of the actor's name, I'm drawing. Werewolf of London with the
underbite. Henry Hull
with the underbite. I love that. I absolutely.
But that was actually a demand of Henry Hull.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying as a design.
Yeah. No, it looks good, but and Werewolf of London, other than being a very cool song, and you might just reminds me if my daughter's listening, I want my Lee Ho Fuchs shirt back.
Yeah.
I know it's being passed around your dorm, but you can.
Sure.
I would have to say that that it's an iconic look, but it does not. Nobody thinks of the Wolfman and doesn't think of
life. No, yeah, of course not.
They're related to Wolfman Jack.
Well, now let's go back. Let's jump around here a little bit. So Wolfman Jack, besides all the other monster stuff, he was a fixture in our childhoods. And I forget when he showed up on the scene in the 60s or late 50s. I forget when.
I would have to say it was the late 50s.
But he just was a guy that was just. He was everywhere. He was on every show, the Midnight Special, all those things.
Hey, everybody, it's Shadana.
I mean, it was a long career to pull this
off. He was selling acne medication in
the
70s.
Yes.
But that's like me selling acne medication now.
But he was like, hey, I get what the kids are into. You got zits, man. Check it out, But
he's just sitting there like, what the hell?
But I'm trying to think of – I was trying to think of – significant werewolf stuff in the 80s.
Teen Wolf.
There was the first Howling sequel, which Sybil Danning in Howling 2. So those start to, those like that one.
Howling 2, we could do 10 episodes on extinguish it.
That saw the inside of a theater, is what I'm saying. That actually made it, right?
Yeah.
Didn't it?
Because then after that, isn't
it kind of direct to VHS after that? They made like 15, Howling movies.
Oh, yeah. And like I mean, said, I would have rented that. Just do some like I've seen all those Howling movies. And
I think I've only seen two, like one.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that would have been something I rented. I would have been looking for werewolf movies and renting, you know, older ones and so on. But I'm trying to think of, and the next thing I can think of is the Monster Squad movie that has a werewolf in it, which mm-hmm. I did not see in the theater. I saw on VHS, didn't know what it was, whenever it first appeared on VHS, and enjoyed it and thought it was fun. I didn't think it, I mean, who knew that it was going to be a, you know, a cult kind of thing. But that's kind of that's a cool design, too. Now, that's Stan Winston, I think.
Oh, yeah, all the designs, the Frankenstein, the creature, amazing yeah. Hollywood on its... I just think the film failed because it was tonally weird.
It is weird. It's because
kids are swearing and smoking and, you know, they're just like you needed to go this direction or that direction with it.
It was very much. I heard a great interview recently in a podcast with Shane Black talking about his career. And the guy goes, you know, back to when he started in the 80s. I think he was living with Fred Dekker. They were living in the same apartment, maybe another dude. And he just starts telling these stories about like what a haven this apartment was. Like if they had an open sign from a bar in the window, and if the neon was on, it meant if you were in the neighborhood and you saw that the light was on, come on up to the apartment. We're going to be talking about movies or arguing about movies or talking about writing or whatever. And he just starts listing off the names of people that either lived at this apartment or were in their orbit. I mean, David Finch, you know, Ed Solomon, I think, like all these guys, every one of them ended up becoming a major screenwriter or had films made. None of them didn't end up doing anything. It's a pretty extraordinary little world that they were kind of in. And I think, you know, Shane Black, I don't even know if he'd sold Lethal Weapon at that, because what was Monster Squad? Lethal Weapon was 87. Monster Squad was like 86 or 87 or something.
86, I think. Yeah.
And it feels like that R-rated kind of humor that Shane Black became known for and the cynicism and so on. It's sprinkled into this, but it's a PG-13 movie, and it's a weird. I think you're right. That's one of the things that kind of threw people was what is this? Doesn't quite know what it is.
Yeah. It looks amazing.
Yeah.
It has some great dialogue, obviously, and
the kids
when I watched it, like I watched it on VHS after it came out, and you know, mainly buoyed on the idea that it was connected somehow to the Saturday morning show.
I
enjoyed the film, thought it was great, but I'm at that time I'm probably 15 or 16 years old, and it's like, who is this for? You know, it's definitely supposed to be more of a kids movie. And
but it's weird, isn't it? Because there's like, you know, have you ever tried watching a Bad News Bears movie today? And like, you can't believe that's PG. It's a PG movie.
So oh, yeah. No, I agree.
That weird realm of 70s, 80s where looking back, you kind of go, you wouldn't put that in a PG-13 movie today. Like it was just these weird little hiccups that were in a lot of movies that we saw that looking back, you know, are kind of shocking, I suppose, you know, take the same kid today and put him in front of that or whatever. It might be, a little odd, but I don't remember anything on, like, I remember the cliffhanger TV show that had there was a vampire one. And, but I don't remember anything on television.
Oh yeah. You don't remember the first season of the Fox broadcasting system?
So you're going back to what, 87?
87?
Is that the one where George C. Scott played the president? Is that that launch?
That is. I think we had like shows like Beans Baxter, Married with Children, and Werewolf with
who?
Chuck Connors. Do you remember Werewolf?
No.
Wow.
Chuck Connors. In a TV show called Werewolf from 86 or 87.
And let me blow your mind. Chuck Connors' character is named Janos Skorzeny.
Oh. That's interesting.
Yeah, and what it was about, it's just the Hulk.
so
a guy gets bit by a werewolf, Janos Skorzeny. He goes to hunt him down so he can end this curse, but they're both werewolves.
Oh,
and
one more thing ruined by Brian Hyler that I don't need to hunt down. Don't need to see the werewolf.
Is it ruined or saved by
so
Brian Hyler?
So Chuck Connors is the Mr. McGee.
Chuck Connors. Yeah, I guess so. Chuck Connors is more of like the Hulk is based on The Fugitive, and so I think Chuck Connors is more of the one armed man. I think there was a Mr. McGee, and then the kid in the middle.
Oh, sorry. So Chuck Connors is the werewolf?
Yes.
Oh!
So is the protagonist.
So Chuck Connors...
How am I explaining that?
The werewolf.
You have to throw your badge and gun on my desk.
This is not, absolutely not ringing a bell. I don't know
why. Yeah, no, you're done here.
I saw the George C. Scott show. I remember that. And my father saying something. He saw a billboard and went, see, that means the movie career is over. I'm like, what do you mean? Well, if there's a guy like that's got to do television, that means the movie career. And he used to say he'd never do television, George C. Scott. He'd always say he would never do television. And look at him now. He's doing TV.
You know what? Your dad would do television.
And I think, was Madeline Kahn in the George C. Scott president show? Was she like a vice president or something? I forget.
I honestly, I saw one episode of Mr. President. That was produced by Johnny Carson. And, you know, it wasn't George C. Scott at his height when he was getting a football in the groin. But, you know, it was a fine television show.
It's no Mr. Smith. Let's put it that way.
It's no hardcore. The series that was also on Fox, opposite Werewolf.
Hardcore, the series. Yeah. The miniseries.
Turn it off!
Okay, so then we get to the 90s. Well, wait, shit, have we already done with the 80s? Like, I don't know.
We didn't touch the 40s.
Right, no, I was going to go backwards to the classics, but, like it seems like there's a great werewolf movie called Ginger Snaps. Have you ever seen this?
Yeah, it's a Canadian film.
Great flick. Like stuff like that will sometimes jump out, and you're like, oh, you know, that's, you know, in The Company of Wolves, the Neil Jordan film from 84.
And actually, you know what's really funny about that is the main takeaway from that film is the transformation where the muzzle comes out of the mouth, and that was mimicked in the werewolf TV series you've never heard of.
Oh, so they stole it from The Company of Wolves.
Oh, they absolutely did. Television, you know.
That's it. That movie's bonkers, man. Like the wedding.
It's got Angela Lansbury in it, doesn't it?
Angela Lansbury and Stephen Ray and who's the young actress? I forget. But that whole, remember that like wedding scene where they're all in Victorian, you know, like Mozart type clothing, and they're all turning into werewolves and stuff. And it's got great visuals in it. It doesn't fully hold together, but it's really
it's
good.
It's very music video ish.
Yeah, and it's sort of a portmanteau, but not really. It's got different little stories that you branch off into. So that was 84, but I know I'm missing things from the late 80s around that time. What am I? Oh no, that's Cat People. That's not a werewolf movie. Cat
isn't
People.
It or isn't it?
Is it though? Well, I mean, they're tiger, they're panthers though. They're turning into big cats, so not quite, right?
I don't know. I've always felt like Cat People was, I don't know, just another.
Well, it's got transformation stuff in it. It's got that. That's probably why it sticks in my head, is something that fits the category sort of. Come on, help me out. What else in the 80s, 90s that had like transformation? I don't quite want to get to Van Helsing just yet. film. So is there something between in the company?
I think what it is werewolf films are a little more expensive than vampire movies or zombie movies.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to think of influential 80s.
Yeah,
we were inundated with howling sequels.
Yeah, a lot of those.
And, oh boy, yeah, let's...
Well, we could also say that Kolchak had a werewolf episode. The Night Stalker had an episode, but that's
oh, absolutely, yeah.
But what I feel like there was more stuff in the 80s, and we're going to get letters about this if we don't, start thinking of.
Yeah, of it'll stuff. Be like that scene in Miracle on 44th Street. This is bags and bags of letters.
You know, I was talking to Rockford Jay the other night. We were back and forth on Facebook Messenger, and Wrath of Khan came up or something, and so it was some video or somebody that was. Well, you know, he says he recognizes Chekhov, and Chekhov was not in the first season of the show. And
he wasn't scrubbing toilets somewhere.
I immediately had this image in my head of reading Starlog in a letter. This is in 82 after the movie came out. First guy that must have got home and like, I'm going to write a letter to Starlog right now. This is egregious. And, you know, write.
Dear Cary O'Quinn.
Dear Cary O'Quinn. I don't know if you noticed, but I certainly caught a major faux pas in the second Star Trek film. And then Starlog, in its wisdom and diplomacy, their answer was, well, that's true, but he may have been a crew member that we never saw on screen in the first season, and there's a chance that Khan would have seen it. But you just go, God, even back then they were doing it. They were sending him letters, correcting shit.
Well, what they needed to do was send an army blanket with the answer.
Right, astronaut ice cream too.
Oh yeah, sure.
I know we're missing some stuff in the 80s, and it'll come to me. But then, really, am I wrong, or is the next kind of werewolf thing? Because I remember Ain't It Cool News, when everybody thought Harry Knowles was like, you know, the next big thing, really big thing, if you know what I mean. And I remember when the rumor first kind of leaked about this Van Helsing thing,
how smart
this was going to be, because you know, The Mummy had already happened and been really big, and it's the same writer director, and oh my God, this is everything we've been waiting for with the classic monsters, and they're all kind of coming together. Because again, on paper you go, well, this is fun, you know, Van Helsing is, you know, hunting down the mummy and the Frankenstein monster and the, you know, Dracula and whatever. Maybe the mummy's not in, I forget. Maybe it's just the three. What a big deal this was going to be. It was all over the internet. Like, this is going to be huge. And then, of course, it came out. But I mean, I can't think of anything in between now. I'm running, I after Company of Wolves, I know there's something else.
Well, there's Dog Soldiers.
You know, that's early 2000s. So that's a good play.
I also remember a film with Mario Van Peebles where it was similar to Dog Soldiers, but they were like, it was like a TV movie or an HBO movie. Oh God.
Dog Soldiers is a good flick. That's Neil blah blah, who ended up doing the Descent, which is fantastic. And just about everything I've seen him do since has never lived up to those first two movies. But that's a good werewolf flick. That's a low budget werewolf flick that works. And then we get Van Helsing, and we get like Dog Soldiers, and then we get a steady stream of werewolf. Like there was one I saw last year called Derailed, and it's in the London Underground. And a train that gets stalled, and there's a werewolf somewhere that's been roaming around London or underground or something, you know, killing people. And so it's, you know, it's a character thing where all these different, you know, characters are stuck in the car, and one kind of heroic and one whatever. And, you know, I just, you know, if the trailer looks good enough and if the synopsis is good enough, I lean more toward trying new werewolf ones than new vampire ones, because I feel like there's so many vampire ones.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of
the vampires are sexy.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah, and yeah. I do get that, and werewolves also vampires feed. You understand why they kill, whereas werewolves just kill. And yeah. I don't. That turns them into kind of like aliens.
Right.
So I don't, you know, I want to empathize with the character, and I wanted to mention something because it bothered me a few months ago. I have a book somewhere, and I can't remember if it's a book or a magazine, and I don't, even if I could remember who wrote this, I wouldn't want to name names, but I was horrified to pick up something about werewolves and the person just smacking on Lon Chaney Jr. and calling him a crap, you know, actor. And it was like, I can't believe somebody could get out of this that he sucked. You know, I understand he did some shit, and he was also not, you know, like anyone could have played his mummy. But Karras is also just a lumbering ox. So I wanted to mention that, like, I took my kids when they were, like, 6 and 8 to see The Wolfman and The Mummy. And The Mummy started first, and the kids kind of goofed on The Mummy, to be honest with you. Because it's a little, like, it's got a little bit of a Little Rascals editing to it, and you know. But when the Wolfman came on, two things happened. One, my son and I bonded over the film, and I'll get into that. But the other part was when the lights came up, my daughter was crying. And I just remember thinking, like, yeah, he's a really good actor. Because I think he's horribly and woefully miscast in the film.
You're right. He's not the young, dashing. Because the thing is, it's a tragedy.
Yeah.
Most werewolf stories are sad because.
It's like, I'm a British nobleman, and here's my hobo-esque son who's 2 years older than me.
Now get him a drink.
And he's a lummox, and I don't begrudge it because he's just miscast.
But he looks super sad too, so you kind of that adds.
Yeah, no, he brings the, like, because you watch the film and go, like, was Mom a boxcar hobo? Like, why is he so rough around the edges? Why is he so broken? And I think the only thing that you just kind of feel sorry for him from the onset, you know,
he's kind of got those sad, pathetic eyes that just.
Oh, yeah. Like, my son and I don't know if I've told this story before on the podcast, because I don't listen to the old ones, but my son and I will occasionally greet each other to this day, where he'll say, hello, father, and I'll say, hello, Lawrence, and we'll shake hands awkwardly, because, like, it just, even at his young age, he was like, that's not his dad.
Well, didn't Lon Chaney Jr. kind of have a, didn't he kind of like his cups a little too much?
Oh, yeah, I don't know if
isn't that a thing?
Hollywood at that time, if he was a lightweight or a heavyweight, but
right.
He was a heavy drinker, yeah.
He was no Errol Flynn, but he liked his.
He liked his pops, I'm not gonna begrudge that part of about him because it's very obvious later in his career, but I do kind of think if we wouldn't be talking about the Wolfman based on Henry Hull's performance.
Oh no! But also the design, the Jack Pierce design.
Oh yeah, it's beautiful.
It's so striking, and I also love the feet that we get that shot. You know, that's just inspired, you know, and that's and we only recently started to get action figures and toys that kind of emulated that. And, you know, the famous what's his name, Mickey Hill, who does all the life size recreations of, you know, Jack Pierce doing Karloff's makeup and stuff that you see at monster shows and whatever. He was the first guy that said, no, he's not brown. They used yak hair. You know, Pierce used yak hair for that. So he's gray. So he would make the life-size models, you know, gray. But, you know, we're stuck with Frankenstein being bright green and Frankenstein's monster being bright green and the Wolfman being
bright green. You know, I'm okay with Frankenstein's monster being bright green, but I hated when his jacket was.
When was his jacket bright green? Was he on Miami
Vice? It was in licensing stuff. And I think a friend of mine brought that up, and then it just, like, drove me crazy.
Oh, shit. Wait a minute. speaking of monsters... The Werewolf by Night comic in the 70s. Another thing that you know got the monsters into the Tomb of Dracula, what was it, House of Frankenstein, the other one.
And there was a cartoon called Fang Face.
Fang Face?
About a teenage werewolf, and we didn't talk about Teen Wolf, and that's okay.
Yeah. You know, that's another example of like that. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be mean to anybody. Whatever your jam is your jam. But when suddenly there's a desire for Teen Wolf merchandise, you know, or like, well, how come we haven't gotten an action figure of him as Teen Wolf yet or whatever? I'm like, what? Really? You know, we've really turned a corner. Like when are we going to get the new Hook figures?
You know what we didn't discuss is some of the 50s and 60s too, because the werewolves popped in and out. Like, have you ever seen the movie Werewolf in a Girl's Dormitory?
I've been accused of that several times.
Yeah,
but I don't know.
I think it's like a German film. I don't know if I remember it at all. There was, of course, I was a teenage werewolf.
Yes, I definitely saw that. Was Michael Landon, wasn't that?
Michael Landon, and then that makeup reappeared in a movie called How to Make a Monster, I think, by AIP.
Oh yeah, oh yeah, also, yeah. Oliver Reed in Curse of the Werewolf.
Let's talk about that because
that's a great design. That's a really cool design.
It's a great design, but it is. I understand that they did not want to get sued by Universal, but explain that movie to me.
Oh, that's a bit of a slog. I mean, you gotta.
Oh yeah, like yeah.
But again, on paper, you go, you're getting Oliver Reed is gonna be like, you just go, well, that just writes it. I mean, him being. That's kind of more what the character should look like before he transforms, you know, like that sort of, you know, he's right. Looks like he's crazy. And then, you know, he becomes the werewolf and I think that's a really cool design. I mean, I think
a lot of guys saw the last thing they saw before they woke up in the emergency room was Oliver Reed.
Oliver Reed acting like a werewolf.
Yeah.
But that's one that I would have seen in pictures well before I saw the...
Oh, absolutely. I don't think I saw that until I was in my 20s, actually.
Yeah, because that's a hammer. Am I wrong? That's a hammer.
Yeah, it's one that, like, I have had a postcard of in my bathroom for the last 30 years. Iconic.
Yeah, it's a crazy design. I've got that little minifigure. Remember that we've talked about that?
The ones at dollar stores. Yeah.
So strange that they
I have the distinctive dummies like 10 or 11 years ago did a limited edition Hammer series. Mm. Especially when we thought we were never going to get Hammer figures.
Right, right.
And even when we did, Mego was so hamstrung by what they could use. It was, and you're going to find that with NECA too. Like, they're going to go to all the same resources Mego did and then be done because there is no Oliver Reed likeness.
Yeah.
I got this beautiful 8-inch. And the thing that drew me to that figure was it was covered in blood. Like, Martin, the artist behind Distinctive Dummies, you know, he kind of did it like a little kid would paint an Aurora model kit of a mummy. Mm. And the action figure I'm working on right now for Lincoln Monsters, I'm doing the exact same thing because that's what made me buy that from him.
Okay.
And, that's what made me open my wallet was like, that looks awesome. I have to have that. And I will not. That's the only 8-inch action figure of Oliver Reed as the Wolfman I'll ever own. And yeah. I will not part with it.
Yeah, it's a really cool, I think it's a very iconic.
Yeah, and you know, the other thing that kept werewolves alive would be Dark Shadows with, like, Quentin Collins.
Dark Shadows, which is not a show that I really, like, I saw it as a kid, you know, on, Syndicator in the afternoons or something, but it was never really something I was aware of, but didn't really. know
about. Yeah, I didn't have the patience for it, but my good friend John did, and I think I still talk to John. And he would, like, basically tell me what was going on in Dark Shadows.
Yeah, but he wasn't.
When I was a kid.
Werewolf, the werewolf was when. Well, he wasn't in it much, was he? The werewolf guy?
I think he was in it quite a bit. But eventually what happened was when I got a little older, I think Sci-Fi Channel was it running Dark Shadows during the day?
Sounds
and,
right.
And I started watching it just out of boredom. And they were running Tom Baker, Doctor Who's, and Dark Shadows. And Dark Shadows is, you know, it's so padded. You know, I watched several seasons of it, and, you know, they did the Frankenstein thing, they did the Wolfman thing, they just, it was just soap opera.
Yeah, that's the part that always threw me, that, what, it's a soap opera? I don't know. So I wasn't really around it much. Okay, so now we get up to, like, the 2000s, and, like, the last, I don't know, I'd say the last 15 years or so, there's a lot of, I mean, I think we're, like, in a horror kind of renaissance right now. I think that
I think there's more werewolf movies that I haven't seen than I have seen now.
Yeah, there's, but it's this weird time where, you know, horror has become a big thing now, and if it doesn't make it to a theater, maybe it's smaller and it's streaming, you know, for rental or whatever, and there's a lot of, you know, hidden gems of smaller things, but we're just in that. We're getting a lot, you know, this is, you know, the werewolf will never go away. Like, there'll always be someone that wants to reinvent it. Like the one that's coming out, that the guy that did the Invisible Man.
And you know what? It may suck. And there's no way they're not going to try again.
Yeah, it's just there's something about it that people, you know, the full moon thing and the transformation thing. We've seen it so many times in comics and different.
Have you ever seen that Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea episode where everyone becomes like werewolves?
Yes. Oh my God.
Yeah. That's a special kind of dumb.
Oh my God. I totally forgot about that. Jeez. Yeah. Well, see, they slipped them into everything. They just
were. Yeah. No, it just became, it is like mummies.
Yeah.
Frankenstein, Dracula, werewolves, ghosts, you know.
Yeah, they
were in Scooby-Doo. I don't remember I think there was a famous werewolf character for Scooby-Doo. You're right about the Groovy Ghoulies.
Groovy Ghoulies.
It does seem to be like the Trinity is usually Frank, Drac, and Wolfman.
Well, okay, so let's get to this then, because as you think of films or things that fit into the timeline, just throw them out. But did you ever see the Joe Johnston directed Benicio del Toro Wolfman film?
I did.
Okay. So now we know that there's been the one that got released, and then there was like a director's cut that I think is better, but also that there was a lot that was kind of a mess of a film, the studio and the different drafts and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But I think it's better than it's given credit for. Am I wrong about that too? Like, I think it's the transformation. Yeah, it's a little ropey with the, you know, with the some of the CG stuff. But the look that Baker created for Del Toro, I think, is great, and it is extremely violent. You know, good cast.
You know, it's been a long time since I actually sat down and watched it. And
because isn't that officially the first time that the Lon Chaney one was remade? It's the same character. Have they never done that?
You know, that I don't know about that, because
okay.
You know, I think it's the first time like Universal tried to remake it. Yeah, you're probably right. But a lot of other people have tried to remake it.
Well,
you know, I don't know what was wrong.
What's his name? Larry Talbot? It's Larry Talbot, right?
It's Larry Talbot, yeah.
I mean, there wasn't other werewolf ones with Larry Talbot, right? It was just
not often, no. And, you know, I'm don't hold me to this, but I can't think of anything.
What I love about the name Larry
except Talbot, parodies, because, you know, I'm not
well,
master of that domain.
I was going to mention I might as well mention now that you just said the P word. There was a werewolf.
What's another, the P stand for?
Who said porn.
Okay. I just wanted you on record saying
porn. I was over at my little, as a little kid with my then girlfriend, Jackie. I forget who's how, but like one day I went with her and her mom and dad down the street, or we got in the car and went to her uncle's or something. I forget whatever I was doing that day. And the house that we went to, the guy whoever lived there, maybe it was her grandfather, I forget, had like a little mini trailer, like Winnebago type thing in the driveway. You know,
right.
You pitch up behind the the car. And, you know, we were little kids, and so we were outside, and like, oh, what's this? And we went into the little Winnebago thing, and we're looking around, and there were a couple of magazines in this little magazine rack on the floor. And one of them happened to be, it was either Penthouse or Hustler, because it wasn't Playboy, let's put it that way. And we're paging through it, and there was this, I was going to say spread, but that's probably the wrong word to use. There was this photo play, shall we say, of a guy that turns into a werewolf. And yes, there was a naked lady there too. And, you know, pretty fairly graphic for I'd never seen this in a magazine before as a kid. And
so this is why you suggested this topic.
Just as we get to the page, I swear. Just as our little kid brains are going, hey, wait a second, what is that? Is that? And we're kind of giggling. Her dad came into the trailer right at that moment.
Yeah, it's like they have radar.
Just like it was in slow motion, you know, walked over, reached out, grabbed the magazine, and we both looked up and he said, you know, they shouldn't even be allowed to print this kind of thing. You know, it's awful. And then he walked out of the trailer. I thought, hey, can I get that back? I know I agree, but. I wasn't done. So okay. Well, I'm gonna recommend a werewolf movie, which I've recommended before, or I've talked about before on the show. And now I feel terrible. I can't think of this man's name, writer, director, actor. His name will come to me. But his first film was called Thunder Road. He made a short film called Thunder Road. They made it into a feature.
Are you talking about Bone Tomahawk?
No, not Bone Tomahawk. This guy that made The Road, I think he got like a Sundance Prize and made it into a film. And he's made several films, and he always kind of walks the line of a little squirmy, and you want to laugh, but then kind of dramatic, and he's a great actor. Anyway, his second film was called The Wolf of Snow Hollow, and it came out right around COVID. And it's one of the last movies that Robert Forster made. And this guy who wrote and directed it and is in it, he's the lead, and he's like the deputy. He's the son of the sheriff, who is Robert Forster. There's some other kind of slightly familiar faces in it, but it's up at this, like, I don't know, Colorado, wherever it is. It's up a mountain that's got, you know, ski season coming up, and there's a really violent murder, and they're finding an animal element to the murder. You know, word goes, like, full moon, another full moon's coming up, that it could be a werewolf kind of thing. And that's all I'll say. So it's streaming to rent, probably for like $4 or $5, but I could not recommend it enough. Again, it's one of those rare beasts that walks the line of scary and atmospheric and, you know, elements of horror, and then kind of laugh out loud moments. Like Shaun of the Dead. Like Shaun of the Dead walks that line. But it's a great, new, interesting way to spin a werewolf story, finding a different way to kind of tell that story. And I wish I could think of his name, because I can't. But it's called The Wolf of Snow Hollow. I highly recommend it. I recommended it to everybody when it hit. And the people that have taken me up on it have not been disappointed. But it's a great way to do a werewolf thing, you know?
Yeah.
The werewolf will never die.
No, but, you know, let's just kind of dip into a little schadenfreude before we go. American Werewolf in Paris.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Who was it? Was it Julie Delpy?
Yes, it was.
Julie Delpy, and then the guy from That Thing You Do.
I've never seen it, but it was John Landis directing that.
He directed that? Are you sure?
Yeah, he
directed American.
Oh,
Werewolf.
No, he didn't. I'm sorry.
No, I don't.
I thought he did. No, okay, that no. actually makes me.
But it is. But he did direct Blues Brothers 2000.
I never heard of that.
Which is on par with American Werewolf in Paris. I've seen that film, American Werewolf in Paris. And
me too, and I'm happy to say I saw it on VHS once.
Yeah, and isn't the gist of it the Julie Delpy is the daughter of the nurse of Jenny Agutter because they had a tryst and she got pregnant and she's the daughter of that coupling, if you will.
I did not care to link the films.
Well, I had to find my way through it somehow.
And is that really what it was?
I think it was. If there was a to the original film, yes, and it's terrible, and the transformations are awful.
I don't think on this topic we could just put a bow on this. I think we could keep talking werewolf films because yeah. I'm sure that you know I could spend a half an hour speaking about a movie called Lichen Colony, but I'd really like you to see it.
Yeah, well, I could think of some others too, but off the top of my head, I'm having trouble. But I know that I've seen like a slew of werewolf things the last 10 years or so.
And I think we could like literally wade into this topic the way we did, because there's so much more to explore.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a perennial.
I mean, I think what it is about him is he's empathetic.
He is the thing that so many are sad. So many of the stories end up being kind of sad.
Yeah.
I like the werewolf movie to be a happy ending. He gets to kill a bunch of people, and then he gets to live to see another day and make it to another film. But most of them are very tragic.
I always kind of want to see the werewolf movie where he's a, you know, it's almost like a revenge story. He's this picked on person who's so good and nice.
You get some of that in that Joe Johnston remake with Benicio. He really is.
Oh, yeah.
He is put upon in that. So when he goes off, you're like, yeah, fuck you guys.
Yeah.
Taking heads and shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there you go. There's part one of our annual two-episode October fun fest of scary stuff.
Shocktober.
Shocktober. My bad.
Yeah,
Shocktober.
Yeah. My bad for not telling you of my lame branding.
Get the newsletter. And as you're the listeners, why don't you tell us what your favorite werewolf things are or some movies that we didn't mention or...
Oh, yeah. Like, there's more movies we didn't mention than we did.
Yeah. Oh, also, speaking of Werewolf by Night, the MCU, the Disney Plus Werewolf by Night was wonderful.
Absolutely smashing. Yeah.
Fantastic. That was so much fun. I wish we'd get more. And if you haven't seen it, I'm not going to say anything about it. Just run to check it out on Disney Plus, Werewolf by Night. Great.
Yeah.
Great.
I would like to see... you know, I'd like to see Marvel's Dracula and Frankenstein as well.
Yeah, bring it, man. Bring it on.
Yeah. No, Werewolf by Night. I never read the comic as a kid, but at Mego Meet, my friend Todd was doing these custom 8-inch Mego Werewolf by Night figures. And unfortunately, he didn't actually end up bringing them to the show because he forgot them. But...
Oh.
I couldn't believe the line that had formed for that figure. Even me, a person who has no contact, was like, that is such a perfect...
The cool design.
It's such a perfect toy design, you know?
Yeah. Toy Biz did a...
I remember that set. That was fun.
I don't know if it was Toy Biz or Hasbro. They did a box.
I think it was Toy Biz. The Monster Squad.
But the Werewolf by Night is great, and the Frankenstein looks a bit like a Bernie Wrightson kind of thing. And then I've got a Man Thing figure, so I've got Man Thing and Werewolf by Night on display.
Do you have giant size Man Thing?
Is it
double size Man Thing?
Now you're getting personal. Now you're getting personal, and I don't know.
Yeah, I am. I'm getting personal on air.
I have a giant size Man Thing. That's maybe that's a good spot to wrap it up. Clearly, me mentioning an issue of Hustler has turned the conversation to Phil.
Yeah, this is a Jugs podcast.
I won't be a part of it.
It's our sponsor, Jugs.
Well, there you go. There's part one down, and part two, who knows? Who knows what it'll be, but let us know what you guys think and what werewolves you dig. And we haven't even gotten to Moon. What was he? Moon Wolf? What's the one from the Spider-Man comic? Man Wolf?
Man Wolf. I love Man Wolf.
That Power Records set. Oof.
Yes. I had that, and it may have inspired something I'm doing right now.
There you go. See, it all comes around.
Yeah, it's full circle. Thanks everybody. And, give us I'd love some feedback in the Pod Stallions group or on the YouTube page. I can't believe our YouTube page has got 21,000 subscribers. Thank you so much. That was a fantastic surprise.
There you go. And now with this one, it's going to be 22,000. You watch.
I hope so. That'd be lovely, because this was a fun conversation, sir.
Fantastic. Part two, right around the corner.
You got it.
Thanks. All right,
everybody. Thanks.